is a celery die. Extra!
Sales red meat. That's what it is. Red meat that you can take out into the street 1 minute after you hear it and turn it into money.
In a New York minute?
No, actually, Jenny, in a Jersey minute. And today's Sell or Die Extra is brought to you by...
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like? It's Friday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week, all in one place.
A sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true seller diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet...
What are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die.
Please help me welcome the great Weldon Long.
Really, for me, Jeffrey, it came down to that day of June 10th of 1996. I was in the cell house. One of the cops told me to call home, and I found out that my father died. And the second that I realized my father died, the first thing that went through my mind was that my dad went to his grave with me in the penitentiary again, because it was my third trip, and it was all my dad had ever known of me, being a punk and a thug. And I started thinking to a conversation I had with my dad just not long before he passed away. It was a Sunday afternoon, and I called my father. He took my collect calls, as he always did. He didn't have money to help me and that type of stuff, but he didn't understand me. He was a career military guy, but he always tried to encourage me. And we were talking on the phone, and my dad said at one point, he said, "You know, son, your life could be worse." And I said, "Dad, how the hell could my life be any worse? I'm a ninth grade high school dropout. I've never had a career in education. I've never had a home. I've got a 3-year-old son that I've abandoned who's out there somewhere. And I'm not getting out of prison this time until I'm 40 years old. How could my life be any worse?" And my dad said to me the words that changed my life. He said, "Son, you're still breathing. And as long as you're breathing, you've got a chance to change your life." And that was the last thing he ever said to me. We exchanged our "I love you," hung up the phone, and 2 weeks later, he was gone. And when I thought about those words, I thought about that conversation, I just made the decision. I've got my father on this side. I've got a son on this side. I'm the guy in the middle. And I made a commitment to become the son my father could have been proud of. And I made a commitment to be the father that little boy deserved, who was 3 years old at the time. And, so that was kind of the beginning of my journey. I began to read all the books, as I mentioned. I began to realize this whole concept that what was habitually in my mind, I was manifesting. I learned a very simple idea that thoughts trigger emotions, emotions trigger actions, and actions trigger results. And I realized one day that my emotions and my actions were not random. My emotions and my actions were a direct reflection of my habitual thoughts. Then this is what was scary. I realized one day that my emotions and my actions were a reflection of my thoughts, even if my thoughts are wrong. So I could have very inaccurate thoughts, but they were producing very real emotions and very real actions and very real results. And so I realized I had to get my thoughts, they had to become more objective, right? I couldn't trust my own perceptions, in other words, right? Because, you know, I think it was Einstein that said you can't fix a problem at the same level of thinking that created the problem, right? So the fact that my thinking had created 13 years of prison, 20 years of poverty, my thinking was not very likely to get me out of that situation.
Correct.
So I started reading other people and trusting their judgment more so than my own. As I mentioned, the first person on that journey was Stephen Covey in The 7 Habits. And I read that book and it's like, whoa, You know, by the way, 13 years, I got Dr. Covey's book a few hours after my father died. I found it in a box of books in the cell house. That was on June 10th of 1996. June 10th, 2009, 13 years later, by then I'm out of prison. I had built my company. I'd written my first book. And I got a chance to meet Dr. Covey. And on June 10th of 2009, he agreed to endorse that book. 13 years to the day that my father had died. It was an extraordinary experience. And, you know, it was just understanding that mindset, and I was responsible. And, of course, I read all the great books that you've read and a couple that you've written, you know.
Gotcha.
And I just got in line. I got in line behind guys like you and Brian Tracy and Tom Hopkins. And Tom's become a great friend. He actually wrote the foreword to my next book. By the way, I'm going to hit you up for an endorsement on my new book. It's probably crass and very cheesy to do that on the middle of your podcast.
No, fine, I'll do it. I'll be more than happy to.
I want to send you a copy of the manuscript. And if you hate it, just keep it to yourself.
Nah,
if you love it, tell everybody.
I'm going to tell you this. This is the first jailbird I've ever endorsed.
Let's welcome in Susan Harper, Senior Sales Manager for UniFirst. I want to know more about your top salespeople and what they're doing differently that sets them apart from the average salesperson.
Okay, so the one I'm going to talk about that comes to mind the most, his name is Lance Welch, and he came to me 9 years ago. He was a forklift mechanic.
Hey, hold on. Lance just got his name said because he's so great to... I don't even know. How many downloads are we at a month now? Like 70,000?
70,000 people now know about Lance. If I were you, I'd hide him for a little while.
Listen, the good news is he's never going to leave me or UniFirst.
Okay,
awesome.
Cool.
Okay, way to go, Lance. Let's hear about it.
His roots are deep, deep, deep. He bleeds green.
Cool.
So, but what's cool is that he was a forklift mechanic when he came to me. And he just showed all those characteristics. His parents made him get up early and work on the farm. He started a landscaping business when he was 12. He worked multiple jobs. Anyway, he didn't know a thing about sales except that they make way better money than what he was making. And he wanted to make good money. And he came to me quite a few times. And I kind of pushed him away and he kept coming back. And he just showed the characteristics that I love. And so I gave him a shot. But because he didn't know anything about selling, he only had that thing, you know, that thing inside you that you just, I don't know, I can't, that you just drive. Yeah, he just had that. And I knew I could teach him if he would follow our training, follow our scripts. So we went through, UniFirst has some amazing training that we put all of our new hires through. It used to be in person. We used to travel. In 2008, we switched to video conferencing to save some money. Everybody was cutting salespeople. We were pumping them up. And that's about the time we brought Lance on. And so he followed our training. He didn't know any different. He followed our training. We got through the book work. We got through the video training. And then where the real learning started is when I hopped in the field with him. And I invented my own version of something called Hell Week. Now we call it Money Week. But I saw these people getting trained at the company. And they have all this stuff in their head, but they don't really know how to apply it. And then sales managers were just sending them out on the street going, hey, you're trained. And, you know, I just know that's not true. So we spent a bunch of time in the field together. I did a cold call. He did a cold call. I did a needs analysis. He did a needs analysis. I directed him where to stop, what to do, made sure he was using his scripts. And he followed our process. And our process works. And he didn't know any different, so he had no bad habits.
Right.
he listened to what I told him. He did it. And he is a 9-time President's Club winner.
Wow.
He made President's Club his first year. And he's making a ton of money. He's probably in the top 1% in Sumter, South Carolina for earned income. So he's my success story.
That is so cool.
Love guys like that.
Yeah. So he was a student. He was a sponge. He soaked up your training and went with it.
Absolutely. He knew other way.
Now, how has the sales world changed since Lance became Lance?
oh, wow, everybody wants to beat Lance. So my team.
They wake up in the morning and, you know, Lance has a first name.
Right. He's well known in the company. He can do anything he wants with the company. You know, he hobnobs with the big rollers. He just loves his job.
But hang on one second. While I have this idea, I'm going to give it to you right now and you can give it to Lance, okay?
Okay.
He goes out to the Harris Teeter in your neighborhood and he buys Lance peanut butter crackers. And he carries them around as his own brand. And he gives them to people as a welcome gift. Hi, my name is Lance. Here's my peanut butter crackers. I need to talk to somebody about why your shit is ugly.
I can't believe I've never thought of that.
I love that.
Genius.
Go Jeffrey.
I guarantee you he will be doing that this week.
Oh, yeah. No, hold on.
I want video
of what he's doing. And I'll coach him personally about how to make the intro. The great Dove Barron.
In 1990, I was going to move from there to LA, by the way. But in 1990, I was an adrenaline junkie. I was very successful. I was speaking all over the world. I was on TV, radio, newspapers, magazines. It was all going pretty great. And in 1990, as an adrenaline junkie, I was free climbing. That's climbing without ropes for people who don't know what it is. It's a sport for the moderately insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell approximately 120 feet.
Ooh.
That's 12 stories and landed on my face and got smashed to pieces. Or as I like to say, I fell 120 feet from a self-imposed pedestal. Yeah. And landed on my ego.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I got smashed up. And of course, that made it sure I wasn't going anywhere for a while. During that process, which of course, as you can imagine, was incredibly painful and many reconstructive surgeries, somewhere between 10 and 12, died several times in the process. But the first sort of 9 months when people would say, how are you doing? I'd say, I'm great. I'm coming back. Well, that's not exactly how I'd say it because my face was wide closed. So I'm great. I'm coming back. But that's what I'd say. And then, you know, I'd put on this, you know, I'm the tough guy. I'm the leader. You know, I can do this. But the truth of the matter was that I was darkly depressed when I was on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And on a particular day when I really had lost hope that I could ever find joy in my life again and feeling like I'd never be able to come back, even though that's what I was saying. I'd actually had a night out with my mates and we'd had I'd laughed and I was like in awe that, oh my God, you know, I finally can laugh. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it could come back. And I walked in my door, I opened the door and as I looked across the kitchen, there was garbage festooned across the floor. There was rotten meat wrappers, there were coffee grinds, there were empty cans. It was for Stunken, it was not good at all. The whole thing was bad, along with litter box and all the rest of the stuff. And I knew exactly who the culprit was. It was this damn cat, this Siamese cat that I didn't like. It wasn't my cat. It was given to me. And I immediately went from feeling joyous to feeling furious and filled with rage. And I went looking for this cat and walked into the living room and the cat was curled up on the couch. And I'll be honest with you, it's shameful, but I lifted my hand to hit the cat. And as I brought my hand down, something in me stopped. And as it stopped midway, and I touched the cat instead, and I put my hand underneath it, and the cat was cold and curled up, and the cat was dead. And I picked the cat up in my arms, and I fell to my knees, and I began to weep. Not cry, weep. Sobbed like that, sobbing. And out of these little lucid moments of like, why am I crying? I don't even like this freaking cat. What is this? And I couldn't stop it. And then suddenly I realized I was not crying for the cat. I was crying for the life that I'd lost, that was gone, that there was no back, there was only forward. And as I laid there on the floor in the fetal position, I knew there were three choices. Go back, which I worked out though that's not a possibility. The second choice, which was very seductive, which was stay here, be a victim of circumstance and just be, you know, oh, I could have been, you know, the Marlon Brando line, mm-hmm. I could have been a champion, but, you know, shit happened, so it's not my fault. Or move forward, how do I do that? And I began to ask, why am I here? That dark question, why am I here? What is the point of my life? What is the meaning of my life? It, you know, I had the success. I had the nice house. I had the nice car. I had all those things. But it doesn't have any meaning. What is the meaning of my life? And I began to question my purpose. And that was how I began that journey for myself. And over the next 9 months, I began to step more and more into that. So our first 9 months was a gestation period to give birth to the truth of the depression. And the next 9 months was a gestation period of stepping into my purpose and doing what it is that I'm here to do.
This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to GittimerLearningAcademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher and come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.